Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource graciously supported through contributions by our listeners. To find out more about our program and how you can help, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com or stick around to the end for more information. Now, on with the show. Welcome to episode 114, a special episode in which we revisit one of our prior conversations on a classic of organization theory. Today, we go back to Eric Trist and Ken Bamforth's famous study, Some Social and Psychological Consequences of the Longwall Method of Coal Getting, published in 1951 in the journal Human Relations and covered in this program in episode 34, which we released in 2017. To learn more about the text and the original episode, please go to our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com.
Hi, this is Pedro coming to you from Gothenburg.
And this is Tom calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States. And welcome to a revisit of an old episode that we did, believe it or not, 6.5 years ago, although it feels like it's yesterday. What we wanted to do, since we've been at this now for close to 9 years, is to go back to some of the early episodes. It's kind of sprinkle this through the calendar, where we'll take a look, a re-listen, and a revisit to an early episode that we did, and see what how our feelings about it have changed, or how our understanding of the text has changed in the intervening time. And the one we decided to do first is from episode 34. It is the episode of Eric Trist and Ken Bamforth's famous study, Some Social and Psychological Consequences of the Longwall Method of Coal Getting, which we did as an episode to introduce socio-technical systems and to bring in the Tavistock Institute. It was one of several episodes we have done about Tavistock. And the reason why we chose this one is because apart from Taylorism, that episode, which was our first ever episode, this one is the one that keeps getting referenced in subsequent episodes. As a matter of fact, just a few episodes back, we were referring to this episode. And also because it comes up in a whole range of different topics. It's not just about socio-technical systems or organizational change. We've had it come up in job design, gendering. It has had quite a broad impact. So we thought that that would be a good one to go revisit 6.5 years later.
Listening to you kind of prompted me to think why I feel at least that this is such an important episode, or one that is still in my mind after all these years, which, gosh, I cannot even fathom that all this time has passed already. And I think that there's a few reasons that comes to mind. I think that that study was able to capture a puzzle that is kind of enduring, right? And I think it's the power of research and related papers that are able to grasp a very concrete puzzle. And in that case, is about how a technology that was implemented, this new way in which coal getting was going to be structured, was actually having all of these unintended consequences and leading to more absenteeism, more conflict when they're supposed to bring efficiency, improve production, facilitate, be less strenuous, and so on. And of course, in unraveling and examining all of that, what is interesting is that they did not only found the reason, which is about how the technology disrupted the social system as part of the social technical systems that existed in the mine, but in doing that, they also were able to construct a framework, a perspective that has been so powerful because it's associated, and that is important to say, and the reason why we have other episodes on the Tavistock, because it's associated with a school, with a tradition, right, that has done many, many other important studies and through them built a lot of important vocabulary. So thinking back to what we did in light of all of the debates about AI and, you know, expertise and what is happening to the workplace nowadays, all of this is happening all around us still today with different forms and shapes and faces, right? But I think the interesting thing about such text and our discussion to some extent is to be able to put in the foreground on what it means to search for questions that are out there, that are puzzled, that are important, that are felt, that are intriguing, being able to handle and write about them and study them in a particular way and do that in a way that is not just idiosyncratic to the case, but is trying to understand that in comparing to other studies, in comparing to what we knew before, right, in that case, and come up and offer ways to understand it conceptually with a new light.
Yeah, I like the way that you described it as a puzzle, and it definitely was a puzzle at the time, because it really was purely about changing the structure and the processes by which an organization functioned. And climate and culture, which we nowadays, we think about that just naturally when we're talking about implementing organizational change nowadays. It's hard to imagine, but it was true. It was not a consideration. It was not part of the conversation. And going back and reading the article again, I'm still struck by how surprised that the leadership of the firm was that these problems were happening and the puzzle had presented itself. We just wouldn't think about that nowadays, that yes, those elements, I mean, the elements of the socio-technical systems framework of structures, technologies, climate, and culture is very, very easy for us to grasp nowadays. And yet we still face puzzles of that variety, of which trying to influence one also influences the other three in a very interdependent fashion. And we still find the puzzles, like we know what the path to the answer is, and yet we still get tripped up in trying to apply the lessons to modern day situations.
I think that's because we have somehow, sometimes, and we are naturally led towards that, a sort of expectation that organizations or work or whatever it is going to be smooth and naturally flow, and that bringing in technology is going to be, you know, easy, or even that organizations do what they're supposed to do or expected to do, right? And I think maybe I was trying to think in the past 6 years, what do I think that I've learned? And that is one of the things that I start the courses I teach about organizations, kind of that, is that organizations don't do what, they are complex machines to accomplish goals, and their complexity of are such that to expect them to easily provide and produce and give, you know, something or incorporate a new idea or technology is kind of not supported by research, right? So not supported by what we know. So starting the question in terms of nowadays, oh, is it surprising that this, you know, we have this new technology but doesn't work as expected, or we did this new thing but actually didn't, you know, fully resolve this kind of 0-100 outcomes or any kind of straightforward outcome is maybe what we should not expect. But we easily get seduced into such expectation. Right. So I think there is something, a meta learning about all of this and all of this podcast we have done ever since that is important to take into account as well.
In a way, we've almost come back full circle, because when we think about change in complex situations and complex organizations and the pressure that leaders are under sometimes to do something, you know, like if there's a problem that exists in the organization, well, what are you going to, which lever are you going to pull first? And the easiest lever is going to be something of the tangible sort, which means change a structure or change a process, you know, with the recognition that culture and psychological climate, the other kind of half of the equation, the social fabric of the organization, being so hard to predict. And the desire to try to engineer change, if you will, the still desire to have a firm connection between the solution and the outcome, what it is that we want to do. And so we're sort of backing into a situation where culture and climate doesn't get the attention it deserves up front, the way that the Tristan Bamforth study would lend us to need to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. one of my re-listening, re-reading of the text is also not just that the climate matters or the social dimensions matter, right? But they also the design of the technology and the implementation also matters, right? So that's why social technical and to some extent, understanding the variety of ways in which you can configure technologies and different types of technologies matter and how, in that case, how a change from one to the other and all of these repercussions, but also how, and that was eventually happened, right? How there were different ways to reconfigure the technology that is the workflow and the use of particular tools in ways that, in that case, recreated the social ties that were related to groups, for example, or that the workflow finished in a particular, in the job design, where the tasks were completed and who he was working with whom, you know, this could be reworked as well. So I think there is also a dimension of the learning that we take for granted today. And maybe that's why we reference this case so much in some of the episodes about job design or structure in general as well, or technology change, is that the complexity is also one of the infrastructure of the organization, not just the soft aspects of it.
Yeah, what I wonder is that some of the episodes that we did that referenced this one included, like, for example, the Gideon Kunda episode, in which if we were to sort of connect what the leadership was trying to do, there is one where we say, all right, let's engineer, effectively engineer culture, and at the same time, engineer climate as well, in the same way in which we engineer change through modifying structures and modifying processes or technologies. And of course, that's a good example of some really bad outcomes on the basis of trying to engineer culture as if it were structure and process. So there's some pitfalls, perhaps, or some traps that this model presents for leaders trying to improve their organizations.
I think that is an interesting question, but that's already another episode. So we have to say some of this for another time on engineering culture and so on, and towards saying you can manipulate the more soft aspect of organizing, right? I don't know if it's always necessarily so uncommon and unpredictable and negative, but I think that the challenge is, and I think that is the wisdom of the Tristan Bamforth text and ideas and related Tavistock tradition, is their interdependence of these different, the social and the technical systems, right? Is understanding that they go together, that they mutually influence each other, which nowadays has is talked about in many, many different terms on the role of technology, materiality, social materiality, and all of that, right? I think the basic insight is already there. And that, I think, is an important thing. It's not the limits of engineering culture, for example, or climate, or only that technology has many possible configurations, but that these coexist. So any kind of intervention could, and I think would do well, to pay attention to this interdependence of these different aspects. That, I think, it's where the nugget that I take still today after all these years lies.
I also love using this particular, not necessarily the article, but the framework. In my institution, we use a derivative framework from this, which was by Ziegenfuss in 2002, where he takes those four elements and puts them into a diagram to show interdependency between structure, process and technology, climate and culture. For my students, for example, who are making the jump from middle management supervisory positions up to senior management, trying to get them to understand those interdependencies so that they learn from and understand how to approach organizational change, this is a pretty easy situation to explain, even to students who don't understand coal mining, because I can point to I can describe the Hangot method using the room that we're sitting in, and the nature of the hewer and the mate, and how pairwise activity led to connections and whatever. That's usually easy to understand, and then explain the long wall method using the wall of the building to say, all right, this is what it looks like. Here, now you've got people who are spread out all over the place with task differentiation and different shifts having different responsibilities, and lay it out for them. Now, what do you think would happen or had happened if you hadn't read the article or weren't already aware of what happened? So the explanatory power of the situation as it's presented in the article is also quite enduring, and it can be quite eye-opening to those who are saying, all right, now, you know, what would I have done or what should I have done if I was a manager or a supervisor in this in the factory at the time, and what does that mean for future organization change that I'm going to drive?
I already use the case when I teach, but I'm going to use it like that to pose the question after describing the different methods. I think it's a great teaching tool. At the same time that I see the strength of the framework and the general insight we take from that, I think it's also important to reflect that the power of the text lies in the details, right? Lies in the ability to be very close to literally the coal face. As they say in the UK or in other places, I think in the West, they'll say, you know, when the rubber hits the road, or on the daily practices that exists in change, organizing, coordinating different tasks, you know, creating group culture, whatever it is, right? The real thing. And I think it's always fascinating to see how there are specific images of the different work processes in the paper in such rich level of detail and understanding, which of course comes from the fact that one of the authors, Bamforth, had worked in coal mining himself, right? So there was like this deep understanding of what it meant to be in such settings and do such work. So I think that it's also in a way more grounded or specific takeaway, which is about what it means to study work up close. And how weirdly sometimes being so specific and actually helps to be more general and help people to nowadays, in your case, you know, participate in a teaching activity that if they can really understand and get the insights that the text is trying to convey and the research try to get at by getting very close to the experience that was happening there.
Yeah, and also you mentioned the detail, and we've also used this particular case study as an example of the power of qualitative research and ethnography or longitudinal study to get a rich understanding of what's going on. Whereas, say, academically, the tendency, we've gone to heavier use of quantitative methods and surveys, which serve their purpose, obviously, but for a lot of the things, a lot of the complex problems that we're dealing with, these puzzles, this form of qualitative or observation-based research is really powerful, isn't it?
I mean, I'm biased because that's the kind of studies that I do. I don't think I'll ever do in my life a study as detailed and rich as this one, but, you know, that is the model. And
yeah, that's why I brought it up.
But at the same time, I want to say that there is one thing that I think has been lost in this, looking at the research that I see around me, you know, from nowhere in particular, but just the research that is common in management today. And when you reach such a text, and maybe that's why we go back so much, because it's so inspirational. We all have to specialize and work in particular smaller topics, or because the emphasis is more on abstraction and building concepts, which all makes sense and is all very interesting and great, and I'm happy. But at the same time, I feel that some type of engagement, some type of interest for real puzzles, some type of, and I think that's even more important, of the work that is done in the coalface, again, both metaphorically and figuratively. Sorry, I want to say.
Yeah, it's just, we have at the coalface, figuratively and literally.
Yes, thank you. Yes, at the coalface, literally and metaphorically, shows the importance of understanding people's work experiences and not just of the abstractions, the top leaders, the experience of particular groups, but the ones that are using experience of technology, right? And going through the motions and being part of whatever is happening and getting up close to that. And, you know, people talk about this sometimes that we have lost the connection with practice, or we have lost the connection to particular groups who practice beyond the C-suites of the world. in trying to get close to the actual work that people do, the members of the organization all across. And I think there is also something that is important from this text. That is not just the richness, which still exists so much, the puzzles that to some extent also exist, but the commitment to getting close to the people actually doing the work, a center for understanding technology, work, change, culture, and all of these, you know, central concepts in management.
Yeah, it is harder, definitely harder to devote the time and the resources and the money to be able to do a study of that depth. We could definitely appreciate that. So
maybe we should say something about, you know, the moment now in relation to 6 years ago. Because I had an idea about that, right?
Because certainly, even though it was an industrial setting, it is amazing how easy it is to carry it forward to current events, especially with the way that we have come to understand socio-technical systems more. We've tended to think about plan change, where you're driving it through one of the four boxes, if you will. It's also useful for understanding just how organizations respond to the change around it, with a psychological climate, which has since been expanded to much more diverse set of concepts like organizational commitment, job satisfaction, and whatnot, and how changing attitudes that are sort of imported into the organization from society through new memberships or whatever, how it influences the other way. From the softer to the harder, as opposed to just the harder to the softer aspects of organization. And I know that that's something that a lot of organizations are thinking about nowadays. As society changes work attitudes, society's expectations of what organizations are there to provide, or expectations about how people commit to organizations are changing. How do the organizations themselves respond via reinforcement of norms and values, changing structures, creating offices or divesting of offices in order to accommodate or to provide the suitable accommodations so that we don't lose people or run into all sorts of difficulties? And so the original framework helps us think more broadly about different ways that organizations are dealing with external pressures and internal pressures to try to keep itself together and perform what it perceives to be its purpose or its mission.
So I was trying to think, if you were doing the episode today, what would we talk about besides what we talked about in the episode and now, which is a lot about the concepts, the richness, the... you know, the puzzle, the role of technology, the nature of the concept of social technical systems and all of that. I think that maybe we'd pay attention more to, in light of debates about sustainability and climate change and all of, or even beyond, right, the geopolitical arena and environment we're living in and the post-pandemic world we are living in. We'd maybe talk more about some of the foundations of what it means, what is the role of coal mining or any form of energy production, right? What it means in terms of worker welfare, the conditions in which this work was taking place, what it means that it was taking place in particular situations in England, what it meant. Historically, we know what's happened to the coal mining story is not very happy in England, right? Because as the economy moved, and more importantly, as the politics moved, those workers and even entire villages, right, had very difficult existences, right? I think we would maybe pay more attention, or maybe just saying that because we covered the basic and the idea in the text, and now we can think more about the context in which it was produced and the context we're living now. And I think we would maybe raise more questions around that. And that just makes me consider that maybe it's a lesson for us as we continue to talk about organizations. The extent in which we may also want to reflect about organizations' role in society, the particular context of the ideas that were generated in and that we are reading them from, and what it means to strike the balance in trying to both get close to puzzles, build generalizable insights, and also be attentive to the social context in which we produce knowledge, think about knowledge, and disseminate it as well.
Thanks so much, Pedro, for the great conversation as we relive this episode. And we certainly encourage the listeners. We're making the episode available here and now with a new supplement. And let's just keep the conversation going.
Absolutely.
And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of their respective organizations or institutions. We hope that you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch with us via LinkedIn, Facebook, X, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Also, please consider contributing to the program by buying us a coffee at www.buyusacoffee.com/TAOP. That's www.buyusacoffee.com/TAOP. Your support is greatly appreciated as it allows us to continue providing great conversations about the classics of organization studies. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you when we present another classic reading on organization theory or management science here on Talking About Organizations.